Good day, everyone. Welcome back to Dreams Warp, the podcast designed to awaken you to a new reality. For today's episode, you know what day it is. It's Sunday, and that means it's time for our Zen stream. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this episode. Hey y'all, before we get into this, I just need to allow a quick word from a sponsor. Thanks for your patience. All right, let's go ahead and get into this. My name is George, and if this is your first time here, first I want to say thank you for checking out the podcast. The purpose of this podcast is to explore the mind and the depths of consciousness that create it. Ultimately, the podcast is here to help you gain a sense of mastery over your reality and your life by mastery of the mind. So if that's something that interests you, you have definitely come to the right place. And I'd like to say that if you find the content of this podcast helpful, I hope that you will consider sharing it with others. Now, we do have a few series here on the podcast. We have our Tuesday Taoism. We have our Zen stream on Sundays. And then I do try to throw in an extra episode here and there on another topic, something related to mental health. That is my background. I've been a psychotherapist now for about 16 years. So we go over things like meditation, mindfulness, dealing with feelings, relationships, all that good stuff. Anything and everything that can help you reach your goals, achieve your dreams, just live an overall happier day-to-day life. So welcome again if you're new. Today being Sunday, it is time for our Zen stream. And I got a good topic for today, I think. And I have been, you know, reading different things for Zen Stream on Sundays, referring to different texts and different authors who talk, you know, bring up subjects about Zen. And, you know, as I always say, Zen is a little tricky to talk about because just inherently language is very limited. And when we use words and we talk and discuss things, we are always, always using concepts, ideas, you know, Zen is really not about concepts or ideas, but nonetheless, we have to make do with what we have. And, so I do my best to usually put out disclaimers like that. And, you know, hopefully, the point is that we get something that is useful out of these, little talks. That helps us in our practice. So that is the spirit in which I offer the Zen stream and all the content really on this podcast. So I had been reading the last couple of weeks a couple of talks given by Mr. Alan Watts. Very interesting stuff. But before that, I was reading from this text by another, actually, Alan Watts is not really officially a Zen master or a Zen he wasn't really a Zen practitioner, but this gentleman who wrote this book called Your True Home, he is a Vietnamese Zen monk by the name of Thich Nhat Hanh. Maybe you've heard of him. He's quite elderly now, and I believe he had a stroke a few years ago. But anyway, he's still alive, and he has people taking care of him. He wrote this amazing book called Your True Home, like I said, and it's a collection of very short meditations, and I found a really good one today. And I figured that it could be used as a springboard to talk about, I think, a very interesting topic, which is the Zen approach to dealing with painful feelings, uncomfortable emotions, which are a part of life, right? So I'm going to go ahead and read this. This is called The River of Feelings. And then we'll talk about it a little bit. And hopefully, like I said, we'll get something good out of it for today, okay? So this is A River of Feelings by Thich Nhat Hanh. From his book, Your True Home. Feelings are born, take shape, last for a few moments, and then disappear. As with the physical form, birth and death of feelings occur in every moment. In meditation, we look mindfully at this river of feelings. We contemplate their arising, their remaining, and their disappearance. We witness their impermanence. When we have an unpleasant feeling, we say to ourselves, "This feeling is in me. It will stay for a while, and then it will disappear, because it is impermanent." Just by seeing the impermanence of feelings in this way, we suffer a lot less. That's the end of the little meditation right there. So this actually connects to, wow, quite a lot, really. I mean, it really presents one idea in my mind, but it's an idea that can be applied to just all manners of our experience of being alive, okay, experiencing this life from our consciousness, from this mind that we possess. And I'm going to explain to you exactly why. He starts out here by saying, you know, feelings are born, take shape, last for a few moments, right? And I would say that that really varies a lot from person to person, right? Some of us have feelings that can last a lot longer than a few moments. And we could, you know, debate why that is. It's funny because when I look at my own experience, doing psychotherapy and working with a lot of patients for many, many years, a lot of them struggled with certain emotional states of being, you could say, that had lasted for years and years and years. And in many of those cases, I'm not going to say all of them, but many, most, it wasn't so much the feelings that were the problem, okay? And just follow me here. The issue, the reason that those feelings were becoming a real problem was not the existence of the feelings themselves. It was the fighting against those feelings, right? It's not wanting to feel them, not wanting to acknowledge them, almost trying to sweep them under the rug or pretend that they're not there, or, you know, use other sort of maladaptive behaviors to numb those feelings out, okay? They're typically one of these types of patterns. Now, in this particular chapter, or this little reading that I just read, he talks about looking mindfully at the river of feelings. And it is absolutely true. And the reason that this came up today for me, and the reason that I'm sharing about this with you, is because, you know, we're all going through a very interesting time right now with this virus that's going around. And we're all, possibly, I would say a lot of us, are experiencing new things, right, as a result of possibly having to stay home, being under, you know, I wouldn't call it like strict, you know, quarantine, but, you know, stay at home orders, et cetera, et cetera. You know what I mean? We're all kind of like almost going through a mandatory retreat. And it's different. It's different from our typical life. There's no doubt that regardless of where you are, the life that we have today is quite different from the life that we had a couple months ago because of this global pandemic that's going on. And as such, we are experiencing, because of that change, for many of us, quite a drastic change, we are experiencing new feelings. We're experiencing new types of thoughts, new mental states. It's like, whoa, this is not normal. This is not what I'm used to. And it was funny that last week I had two or three days myself personally where I wouldn't call it stir crazy, because that's not really what I was feeling. But it was just a sort of just collection of negative thoughts coming into my mind and accompanying negative feelings, you know, unpleasant, emotions and feelings, and just kind of gloomy, okay? That would be the simplest way to put it. Just kind of gloomy, kind of down, you know, kind of just not feeling that great. And it's funny because I think many times in the spiritual community or the mental health community or the self-help community, there is this kind of implied perspective, I guess maybe a good way to put it, that we're supposed to feel happy all of the time, right? That if we're enlightened, or if we're moving toward more happiness, more joy, right, more of emotional states that we want, then by definition, we should be experiencing less and less and less of things that we don't want, negative emotions, negative experiences. And it's funny because Zen does not take this approach, okay? Zen basically looks at everything that arises, good, bad, indifferent, and basically just encourages us to observe it and observe it mindfully and recognize that it is always only temporary, always only temporary. And it is our immediate tendency, knee-jerk reaction, you could say, to grasp onto one of those experiences and then build a story around it. Oh, I feel so good right now. This must be because I'm doing this and this and this. And I got to do whatever I got to do to hold on to this feeling and keep it going and feel better and better and better. And we build this whole intellectual castle around this experience. And then invariably, something happens and that feeling goes away. And they're like, oh, what happened? Oh, I must have done something wrong. Maybe I need to go back and do this and do that. Maybe I need to do more of this. Maybe I need to do more of that. And same thing when negative emotions or negative feelings arise. We tend to, oh, why is this happening? Oh, this I shouldn't have to deal with this. I should be better than this. I must be failing somehow. There must be, you know, something I can say, something I could do, some activity I can that's going to pull me out of this feeling. I hate this feeling. And so what we really are seeing there is a strong reaction to things that arise. And we know just from our own life experience, if you look at your past, everything that arises eventually disappears, right? And so when he talks about this in this little chapter, the river of feelings, this metaphor of the river works really, really well, right? Is when you sit next to a river and you watch the water just flow by, that is actually very similar to how all experience passes through our awareness. So things rise, things fall, things appear, things disappear. And that applies to everything: emotions, people, feelings, you know, relationships, jobs, you know, different socioeconomic statuses, different, you know, beliefs. All of these things appear. And you could say, well, hey, you know, since I was born, I've believed this, and I know I'm going to believe it till I die. Yes, that's true, but even you are rising and falling, right? He says it here. Let's see if I find the exact line. He says, even the physical form, here says, as with the physical form, the birth and death of feelings occur in every moment. So even if you have an aspect of your own belief that remains true for your whole life, you could say that even your life is subject to rising and falling, right? As we define life, right? This is the life of this physical body. So everything is rising and falling. It's only a matter of how long, subjectively speaking, things stay in our awareness. But eventually, it always disappears. And so the practice that is often discussed in Zen, okay, or in even you could say in a mindfulness type of perspective, is the ability to observe and not be so reactive, okay? And he says here, the last line, just by seeing the impermanence of feelings in this way, we suffer a lot less. That's not to say that we don't suffer at all, right? but what starts to happen is that much of our suffering, not all of it, but much of our suffering is not actually from the feelings or emotions that arise just naturally, or the experiences we go through that cause us pain or hurt or suffering, but it is our reaction to those. That probably, I would say, is at least 50% of our suffering, probably more. I would say, speaking for myself, 70 or 80% of my suffering throughout my life has been not from specific experiences, but from my mental reaction to those experiences. And so when we approach our moment-to-moment experience from the seat of just awareness, this mindful watching, we will experience all sorts of things, right? It doesn't exempt us from any sort of life experience, but what it does do is that it starts to minimize our personal identification with those things, and as such, we suffer much less. Now, I want to get into a couple other things here that come up in this chapter and talk to you specifically about how this applied as I was helping people deal with trauma. But just give me a moment here. Let me allow a word from a sponsor, and I'll be right back. All right, you all, thank you for your patience. I am back. Let me take a quick moment here, just remind you that if you ever want to reach out to me to ask a question, express a concern, or if you have a suggestion for a future podcast episode, you can always email me at elucidatethereal@gmail.com. You can also hop on over to my YouTube channel by the same name, Dreams Warp. Find any one of my videos. This does not matter which one. You just post a comment under it. Say, hey, I just heard your podcast episode, had a comment, question, concern, or suggestion. And I could respond to you right away. I get notified and I could respond to you. Usually takes me, a day or two. So give me a little time. I also recently launched a Twitter account. You can send me a message there. And you should follow me on Twitter. I do post things regularly there, or I retweet nice things that I find helpful in my own practice. And these serve as little reminders throughout the day to focus on your practice, focus on your breath, focus on the present moment. So make sure you follow me on Twitter to get that good stuff as well. Twitter account is also the same name, Dreams Warp. And finally, if you're enjoying this podcast and you're listening to it on Apple Podcasts, I hope you could take a moment and leave a nice rating and review. That really helps the podcast to grow. All right. So we're talking about this little chapter, Thich Nhat Hanh's book, Your True Home, A River of Feelings. We're talking about impermanence, how everything rises and falls, and how our reaction to what rises and falls a lot of times causes much more suffering than the thing itself. And I remember when I spent a good eight and nine years, working strictly with trauma, people who had been through traumatic experiences and had a diagnosis of PTSD. And, there's been a lot of testing studies done on treatment of trauma and PTSD, not trauma, but PTSD. And across the board, what these studies have shown is that the processing or the talking about the trauma memory, it brings benefit to the person, to the sufferer. And it's very interesting when you look at that through the context of what we have been talking about, because what are you doing when you were talking about a traumatic memory? Well, you are looking mindfully, right? You are allowing that experience, the memory of that experience, to rise. And you are observing it with another person, right? The therapist. Interestingly, and I don't want to go too far off here on a tangent talking about PTSD, but I used to always tell the patient, the memory of the trauma, if you look at it very, very closely, very, very deeply, the memory itself is not the problem, right? It's not. The problem is really the feelings that arise when you think about the memory, or you talk about the memory, or you recall the memory, or the memory starts to intrude into your day-to-day life, right? The memory itself is not the issue. It's the feelings that the memory conjures up. That's what becomes very, very uncomfortable. And for many people who suffer with PTSD, those feelings, those emotions, as they come up, they start to trigger a physiological response, which is basically to say that the biology of our body is misinterpreting a memory and it's treating it as if it were a present moment danger, right? That somehow you are physically, in some kind of danger. The fight flight response is basically being triggered in response to a memory and emotions, as opposed to a real life threatening event happening in the moment. I would take it a step further at that point, and I would say, and when you look even more deeply, even the emotions and the feelings associated to the memory aren't the problem. It's the fighting against them. It's the not wanting to feel them, not wanting to look at them. And that is what perpetuates them continuing to intrude, right? It's almost as if we used to say they want to come out into the open. They want to be looked at. They need attention. It's almost as if, you know, if you have a child, right, and the child skins his knee or hurts himself outside, him or herself, and runs inside, and what immediately is a child looking for? It's attention, right? It's attention. And if you ignore that child, right, the child will continue to cry, to scream, to, you know, look and look, and please help my cut, my this, my that, I'm scraped. And this is similar to these emotions associated or tied to the trauma memory, is that they will continue to ask for your attention. They'll come out in dreams. They will come out at inappropriate times throughout the day. They will intrude your thoughts. They will continue to put it kind of lightly, pester you, right? And interestingly, from my experience in these 8 years, working with a lot of different people, when we're able to therapeutically, safely, in the right way, because there is a right way and a wrong way to do this, you're able to start exploring the memory and feeling those emotions in a safe environment. 99% of the time, the person would start to experience less symptoms of PTSD, less nightmares, less agitation, less anger, less avoidance, less numbing, all that stuff that goes with PTSD. So I really think this is a very profound, real world example of what is being discussed in this little chapter, is that when we have any sort of emotion or experience, let's even broaden it a little bit, not even emotion, any sort of experience in our lives, our tendency is to try to jump into control mode, right? And react. Okay, I need to do this. I need to do that. I need to make this go this way. I need to make this go that way. I don't want to feel this. I want to feel that. I want more of this. I don't want more of this, more of that. And again, like I usually say, you know, in other episodes, there's nothing wrong with, you know, making decisions in your life, right? To kind of, feel, that you are, you know, achieving something, you know, you're doing stuff to reflect your, who you want to be, you know, in other words, it's the creative part of living. There's nothing wrong with that. Let's say, well, I want to create a life where I'm a doctor and I, you know, I have a beautiful home and I have a wonderful family and I have, you know, money to take trips. And that's the creative process of life. And that's fine. That's okay to do that. But there's a difference between doing that, right? Which is kind of an external process, right? I need to take this step. I need to go to school. I need to do this. I need to, you know, I need to date. I need to find the right person. I need to, you know, that all is kind of external stuff. But when we talk about this kind of thing that we're talking about in this podcast episode, in this little chapter, we're referring more to internal experiences, emotional experiences, how we manage our own thoughts, our own feelings, our own experience, our own moment-to-moment awareness. Because I can tell you that it is a lot easier to achieve those external things when you are able to manage your internal moment-to-moment experience in a more effective way. And by more effective here, I'm specifically saying less reactive, less controlling. So we see this this approach that I really like, that Zen kind of implies. Okay, again, not going to say Zen is this. No, wrong. Zen is not that. But it is kind of, as you do the practice, one of the side effects, that's a good way to put it, one of the side effects of practicing and of a lot of meditation is that you will start to take this sort of very anchored, rooted stance where things arise, but you don't react to them as strongly. And it's funny because as I was telling you a little while ago, these last few days where I was feeling this way, I was able to recognize that I was having negative thoughts. I was able to recognize that state of gloominess, as I described it. But I also had an awareness around the experience, right? So I felt it, 100% felt it. And I even remember thinking to myself, gosh, I wonder why I'm feeling this way. Like, where is this coming from? There was no reason for it, right? No logical reason for it. And it's funny because yesterday I was out of it. Like, by yesterday morning, I felt great. But I had yesterday morning, you know, like mid-morning, my regular Zen group, we're meeting through Zoom now, And I had a nice talk with the Zen teacher that works with us. And he also shared about feeling kind of gloomy a few days ago. And he said it himself too, is that, you know, when you're able to just observe it and say, okay, there's, like he says in this chapter, exactly like it said here, I'm able to observe that this is present. I'm able to observe that I'm feeling this way. But I also know that this is just temporary, that it's going to pass. And it's having that knowledge, you still feel the feelings, you still have the negative thoughts going through your mind, but you suffer less. There's no other way to put it. You just suffer less as a result of it. And this also, by the way, another metaphor for this process is even when you sit down to meditate, right? When you sit down to meditate and, you know, I try to do, you know, between 15 minutes and half an hour a day. Yesterday with the Zen group, we did about an hour and a half. But what you will find as you do this over years and years and years and years and years is that early on, you may find it more difficult to hold still, right? You have these thoughts appear in your mind. You have these emotions that appear. You have aches in your body, itch, right? You suddenly start to have an itch. Your leg itches, your arm itches, your head itches. You have something on your face. You know, you just start to feel all of these things come up. And it's funny because I'm reminded of this more lately because I've started doing sittings with my son. He's young. He's 9 years old. He's been doing it maybe 6 months to a year now consistently. And I see it in him. You know, he's adjusting. He's moving. He's itchy. He's this. He's that. He's got this going on. He's got to go to the bathroom. He wants to drink some water. He's all these things, right? And I allow it. I allow it. As long as he's doing the sitting with me, I'm happy. But the point is that in much the same way as I have been describing, what I started learning, especially when I was doing the Japanese style Zen, which is much more strict about forms, they would tell you, do not move. Do not move. If you feel itchy, just wait. Just wait, and you're going to see that eventually it goes away. It passes. And invariably, it always did. It always did. The aches, the pains, the itchiness, the discomfort, the mental noise, the emotions, all that stuff. When you are sitting, it is almost a physical representation of being anchored. You are literally anchored to the ground or the seat, whatever, and you are not moving, right? Like an anchor does not move. And in that process of watching breath rise and fall, you will see thoughts rise and fall. You will see emotions rise and fall. You will see memories rise and fall. You will see future projections rise and fall. You will see conversations you had rise and fall. You will see everything in your life rising, falling, rising, falling, rising, falling. And as you witness this over and over and over and over, and you do not move, you will begin to have a living reality of what this little chapter is talking about instead of a conceptual one. So I encourage you to do that, as I always do. I really hope you found this content helpful today. Again, if you want to reach out to me through all those methods I mentioned earlier, feel free to do so. And again, if you're listening to this on Apple Podcasts and you enjoyed the content, I hope you could leave me a nice review and rating. And stay tuned. I'll be back on Tuesday with another installment of Tuesday Taoism. Have a wonderful, wonderful rest of your day.